You're listening to Second Stories, created and produced by Second Story with me, Abigail Brocker, as your host. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia working to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. We help homeless youth and youth in crisis step away from their first story, one often marked by abuse, hardship, and crisis, and write their own second story, full of hope and promise. This season, we're bringing you something new, topical episodes about challenges faced by some of the individuals you're hearing this season. Each of these episodes will look at one of the stories from the season and dig into the challenge that stood out the most. Things like domestic abuse, PTSD, or family crises. We'll put this challenge into its broader context and ask some big questions. What does this issue look like in our community? What does it look like for a young person to experience it? And how does it play into their bigger life story? We've already been taking some of these abstract concepts and putting them in a personal context through these stories. But now we want to take these stories and place them back into a larger picture. Because, of course, there are more individuals in our community forced to choose between a place to stay or an abusive partner. There are young people experiencing homelessness. There are young people struggling with PTSD. And it's important that we understand why and how these issues play out in their lives. Each episode will feature a panel. Me as host, a Second Story staff person with experience working with the issue we're discussing, and a person whose story you've already heard on the podcast. Together, we'll talk about the issues and we'll keep it grounded in actual experiences and actual stories. To experience something like an attack, a natural disaster, an assault, can feel earth-shattering. But common wisdom says that when we experience something like this, we process, we recuperate, and we move on. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Keep calm and carry on. Trauma, though, is a lot more complicated than that. And PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, is another beast entirely. Think of experiencing trauma, and rather than carrying on, your trauma becomes a sort of kaleidoscope, morphing everything in your life, not allowing you to process or live like you could before. Trauma can cause its victims to be deeply misunderstood by their communities, and it's why it's so important for us to understand things like PTSD. Kathy Benn, Second Story's senior therapist, joins me and Crystal today to tell us about PTSD, its causes, symptoms, and the way it affects its victims. Crystal will tell us about her experience, and together they will continue to process how a person works through and heals from trauma. Thank you so much, Kathy and Crystal, for both being here. Crystal, we already know you a little bit, but Kathy, will you introduce yourself just briefly? You're the senior therapist at Second Story. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Kathy Benn. I'm a licensed professional counselor and the senior therapist here, like you said. I've been with Second Story for 8 years and have been in a number of positions here. Started off with the homeless youth and also worked with community-based programs part-time out in Annandale High School, working with teens in crisis. Then I went full-time to the Homeless Youth Initiative, and then when I got my license, came over and was doing more shelter and sort of clinical work with all of the programs. So I do training, I supervise interns, and I am sort of a go-to for clinical issues with all of the programs.
We're technically a licensed mental health facility, and so a number of young people in our programs at any time can go to Kathy for counseling. So she has a lot of experience with this stuff. She's our resident expert.
Wow, that sounds that sounds daunting. I'm not sure I can live up to that, but
you're more of an expert than any of us are, for sure.
I'll take that.
Kathy, just to start off, will you tell us a little bit about PTSD?
Sure. So post-traumatic stress disorder is an anxiety disorder that can happen when someone has experienced a traumatic event. Mm-hmm. So there's basically three components to it. The symptoms sort of fall into three different categories. The first is a re-experiencing of the event. So not just memory, but actually experiencing the physical and emotional symptoms of the event. The second is an increased arousal. So a hypervigilance, an irritability, a, you know, sleep disturbances, startle reactions, that kind of thing. The third is a persistent avoidance. So it's avoiding images, people, locations that might remind the person of the event. Mm-hmm. So those three sort of clusters are what make up PTSD.
So one thing that I think of when I hear this is, I feel like it's kind of conversational jargon for some people to be like, oh, I have PTSD from that thing. Kind of like they would say, I'm so OCD about this or that.
Yes.
Which I know isn't really. So there is a difference between someone experiencing something traumatic and then having a, you know, needing to work through that, and PTSD as a diagnosis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, everybody goes through traumatic events in their life.
Right.
But based on our temperament, our individual ability to deal with stress, our, you know, family setting, our, you know, our societal or cultural messages, those kind of things, you know, there's no magic answer that says you're going to have PTSD and you're not, but it's not everyone that goes through a traumatic event is going to have PTSD.
I always think of that movie, American Sniper. Have you guys seen that movie, American Sniper? Okay. It's about this person who was in the war. He had PTSD. So I think for me, my idea of PTSD was that it's most often or usually experienced by people coming back from war zone, but that it's not. It can be experienced by anyone.
No, but that is how we've learned how to sort of think of PTSD, because it makes sense to us that that's just such a horrific event that, of course, people would have reaction to it, even though most veterans don't have PTSD.
Okay,
but the ones that do, you know, we all know people, veterans who, you know, have to sit with their back to the wall and face the door because they're always, you know, at heightened arousal and super vigilant about something bad could happen any minute. And they're having sleep problems because they're having nightmares and flashbacks. So we have sort of gotten to know what it means. It's not just veterans. It can happen across ages, across, there's no magic. It only happens to poor people, or it only happens to homeless, or any of that stuff. I mean, it can happen to anybody.
I know that it's a factor for the young people that we work with.
Some people do. And the important thing to remember, like you said, is that not every person that goes through a traumatic event has PTSD. We deal with a lot of clients who actually have complex trauma, which PTSD may be part of that. They may they may be experiencing those symptoms from a single event, but most of our young people have been in situations where it's more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. So if you have abuse, that may be long-term stress that's put on your body from abuse or neglect or long-term poverty or violence in your home or, you know, separated families. You don't have the support system if your parents have also gone through complicated stress. So it's a bigger picture of most of our clients, because if you've gone through a traumatic experience and you have a support network and you can process it and talk it out and deal with it, then you're less likely to have complicated stress reactions or PTSD.
Yeah. So say I have a friend who has PTSD and a friend who does not have PTSD, what are some practical ways that they might act differently from each other?
So the having nightmares or intrusive thoughts means that you're not sleeping well, which means you don't really deal with day-to-day stress very as well.
Yeah.
And if you're hypervigilant, meaning that you're, you know, constantly on the alert, then you tend not to trust people. You don't even trust your own instincts. So that kind of person is going to be more, you know, suspicious of others. They're slow to trust. They're not going to share personal things. Right. They're also avoiding. Like, can you imagine if you are working at a restaurant and someone comes in that reminds you of your the event that happened to you or something terrible, you're just going to leave work.
Right.
They also tend to, you know, if they think they're going to get fired, they quit. Or if they think they're going to get kicked out, they leave, right? So it's that whole complicated, you know, we don't always understand what they're going to do because it's easy to label people as lazy or manipulative, but it's so much more complicated than that because there tends to be in this, especially in complicated trauma, there tends to be a lot less self-esteem because they haven't learned, you know, good social skills. They haven't learned realistic expectations.
Yeah.
So they set themselves up for failure because they don't trust their instincts. They don't have good boundaries necessarily. They, it's just a whole different world. So, so you can see it in the day-to-day stress where some people can handle it and are calm and can get through it. And it, you know, there's various degrees, obviously, but then some people just can't deal with the day-to-day stressors or even the things that would upset anybody really would set somebody off and they would freak out.
So I hear a big part of this being people act, a person might act a certain way and it seems like one thing, but it's really being misunderstood. And the underlying thing is some kind of trauma going on.
Which is why our programs are all focused towards this, I mean, that's called trauma-informed care, but it really is just a basic way of being that we have to make sure that we're creating this safe space, that we're being trustworthy ourselves, that we're being calm, that we're giving people choice and power in their own lives. So we're, yes, we have rules, but we have to be consistent and we have to be understanding with you have choices. Like if there's, like here at the shelter, if there's a consequence because you've made a bad choice, then we're going to say, okay, you can either, you know, sit quietly or you can do a homework assignment or you can, you know, do chores for whatever the time limit is. So we're trying to give them choices. We're trying to help them think about how else they could react in the future that doesn't, you know, jeopardize their place here. But it's understanding that most everyone we see here has trauma in their background. Some of them do have PTSD, some don't, but they still, we still need to remember that that they don't always have the resources to be able to control themselves or to be able to regulate their emotions like some other people might.
And it seems to me logically, like say a young person has experienced homelessness for a while and they've been staying with people they don't know, or they'd be more vulnerable to experience trauma. Do you think that that is a factor? Are there other ways that homelessness or something could be interconnected?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, our young people that are in our homeless youth program, many of them have friends. They, you know, they have people they can stay with. They haven't burned bridges yet. But after they've burned those bridges and they don't have good relationships and they do risky things or they get associated with other people doing risky behaviors, then they're much more likely to end up chronically homeless, which is a huge problem, even in Fairfax County, which is, you know, one of the richest counties in the country. But then layer adolescence on top of that, and you've already got you know, young people that are going through hormonal changes, brain changes, you know, they're the teenage brain is such a big time for learning new things. And, you know, there's, they're supposed to be taking on new challenges because we're getting you know, they're getting themselves ready for adulthood. Mm-hmm. But that same creativity and search for meaning and this, you know, incredible time of learning new things mm-hmm. also can make them vulnerable
right.
for trying, you know, getting themselves involved in risky behavior
right.
because it's novel. It's, you know, it's exciting. They're mm-hmm. doing new things. They're more geared towards peers anyway. And mm-hmm. their parents are still important to them. But if their parents are going through things and right. are busy, and most parents are, and they're not mm-hmm. really paying attention to them, or they don't understand how important their, you know, electronics are to them, it's really easy to dismiss them. And that leaves them even farther out to other teenagers who are in the same place.
Right.
So
right.
you can see where this would sort of spiral downward.
So much of it just sounds like a snowball.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bring Crystal into the conversation, because what you can't see if you're listening is that Crystal has been kind of nodding along a couple different times, because not only is this personal for her, but she also knows what this looks like in the lives of the young people that we work with. You talked about how you experienced PTSD after the earthquake. Can you talk a little bit more about how this looked personally for you? Because I'm sure this looks a little different for everyone.
Let's see, earthquake happened in January 2010, then I started school February. So I would say maybe a couple months into it, where I would, you know, I remember having this kind of like out of body experience where I was in the classroom and everyone is speaking English around me, and I was kind of lost. Wait, why is everyone speaking English? Like, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. I remember being in my dorm and I hear other people and it's like, wait, you know, what am I? It's like I'm supposed to be back home.
Yeah.
Then the nightmares started. So it would be any kind of situation. I'm in school, I'm in the bathroom, I'm walking to school, and an earthquake is about to happen. So the floor starts shaking and then everything turns dark, and then I mm-hmm. wake up and then I'm, you know, covered in sweat. I'm like shaking, like, did I just really, you know, live this, you know?
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, being in a, when you come into a garage,
yeah.
if
yeah.
there are too many floors, it starts to shake if a car yeah. is passing by. So those like, I have to run, I have to find a place, because I felt like I was back there again.
Yep.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to start experiencing this?
I remember I was still in high school when the nightmares started. I was living with my cousin. So that was anytime between March and June. And it got really bad when I transferred to Marymount and I started living in the dorms. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing that I had the psych class.
Yeah.
They brought that up, because, you know, I wouldn't have had the idea. And of course, I did not mention this to my parents. But I know sometime after we were talking and my mom mentioned something, and I was like, okay, I know she's had PTSD.
Yeah.
From what she said to me, I was like, okay, she was going through the same thing too.
Yeah. When is the first time you heard the words PTSD? Was it in that psych class?
Yes. We had different topics, and, you know, PTSD was the one we had to discuss, and we had to write a paper on it. So I remember I went back to my dorm. I'm going over what PTSD is, doing research. I'm like, wait, you know, you know, you're hyper-vigilant, you're having nightmares, you're having the same dreams again. I'm like, this is me. You
yeah.
know, maybe I should talk to my teacher about it.
Yeah.
So the next class, I waited when class ended and I told her that I was really relating to the subject and everything, and told her a little bit about Haiti, where I'd come from. And that's when she told me that they had the counseling center at school.
Yeah.
So that's when I went to see them, told them what was going on. And they paired me with the counselor. And I was seeing them once every week,
mm-hmm.
once a week, every week for a couple months. Felt good just to go there and, you know, have someone to talk to and bounce things off of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And slowly after that, I started feeling better.
So it's interesting to me that you say it got worse when you transferred. Do you have any idea as to why that was? Or Kathy, is it more common for a change to incite worsened PTSD?
Well, for me, well, when I was going, when I was staying with my cousin, it was the same routine, just school and go back home.
Yeah.
And I think just being on campus, parking lot, a lot of kids,
yeah,
a different environment, and that probably threw me off a little bit.
Sounds like there were more triggers there.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, it's also a stress reaction, which can bring up old stress reactions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that support system is so important. Shared experience is important. You know, people have, there's less PTSD if you're in a community that's also going through the same thing, because there's the outpouring of community support and everybody's going through it together. There was a lot less PTSD after 9/11 than there was after Hurricane Katrina. It's interesting how something that's seen on the outside is so horrific and, oh, everybody must have had PTSD, but it's not true, because there was such an outpouring of support and you know, people going through this together. And while you were in, you know, Haiti and going through it, you know, there was support from everyone else going through it together, and you had your family.
That kind of sounds like why a soldier might be more inclined to experience this than another person too, because they return to a place where no one's had the same experience as them. As you did, you left and no one had that same experience as you. People here weren't in Haiti.
Reminds me of watching this movie, actually. He was coming out of war having PTSD, and I think was having a conversation with his wife and said, you know, you expect me to come back here and tell you that I've seen my friend get blown off next to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't explain that. You will never understand that.
Right.
And there's also survivor guilt, right?
I've had that.
Especially when you had chances that other people didn't have to come and go to college. And so you feel guilty about leaving everyone behind and coming here. And
it's like those moments were like, what am I doing here?
Right. Do you think it helped you, Crystal, to have language to put to what you were feeling? When this started happening, were you confused? Did it help to learn what it was?
Yes, a lot. Because at first I was just like, it's one of those things is happening to you, but you don't want to tell anyone about it. You kind of keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
But then just reading it, you know, the book, doing the research on Google, I'm like, you know, I feel like, you know, it wasn't just me. Other people had experienced it. And, you know, one page leads to another. I remember just reading away that night, and I'm like, okay, it's not just me. This happens. And then talking to my teacher, and then she confirming it. And, you know, going to the counseling center. And I ended up presenting on PTSD, so I kind of talked to about a little bit about my experience.
Wow, and that's
how
amazing.
You know, it was kind of personal.
Yeah.
And just that normalizing and, you know, being able to have somebody tell you it's okay,
you're not crazy. Yeah.
It happens to people. You're going through a normal progression of symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, and working yourself through it. Like, that gives you hope. It keeps you going.
Yes.
You know, all of those stuff help make this just a piece of an experience you had.
But the thing that made me sad is knowing that maybe my dad, I don't know, but I know my mom. And, you know, back home, we don't really talk about, you know, going to see a counselor or a therapist. You know, it's not really a thing.
What are some things that a person can do if they're struggling with PTSD to get better?
Everybody does it differently, but certainly being able to talk through. Some people who have been through trauma need to tell the story over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And some people that have been through trauma don't want to talk about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important for everyone to know that whatever you're experiencing is fine,
mm-hmm.
and that you sort of have to go through what you're going to go through. But being able to process that it's normal reaction to a traumatic event, that there is a way, you know, there's hope. It's not, you're going to live with this forever. It's going to be piece of you forever, but you're going to be able to understand more about how you react. You know, it's sort of learning about yourself and the way you cope. You know, when these intrusive thoughts come into your head, there are things you can tell yourself, things that you can do to, you know, lower the physical reactions, you know, the heart racing and the breathing fast. And, you know, that there are things that you can learn that will help control the parts that are hard. And then knowing that over time it is going to get better and you're going to have less of those really severe reactions, mm-hmm. helps you sort of keep moving forward. and being around other people, you know, even going to support groups or finding people that have been through something similar, that helps. Like, there's all sorts of ways that you can just work with yourself and with other people to try and help things get better, like you did, you know, being able to talk to somebody and realizing that it's okay and that you're going to get better.
And as you mentioned too, for some people it's helpful for them to talk it out. With me just coming here, I guess, you know, one thing when people meet me and say, you know, where are you from? So the earthquake in Haiti was pretty big at the time. So people see me, where are you from? Haiti. And, you know, immediately, oh my God, were you just there? How's your family? So just, you know, having to tell what happened over and over really helped too. And even, I guess I would say I felt relieved every time I told the story or if everyone asked questions. Because not everyone feels comfortable. Some people rather not discuss.
Yeah.
But for me, if anything, I wanted to talk about it.
Sounds like that made you feel more understood if people asked and you had the opportunity to tell them.
Yeah, to share my experiences, yeah.
A big part of this feels like we misunderstand PTSD, but also when someone does something, if maybe it's because of PTSD or any kind of trauma, we misunderstand why they're acting the way they're acting. Is that something we see more often for our clients, Kathy?
All the time. It's normal to, you know, we all try and make sense of the world around us, right? So when you see someone acting like overreacting to something, I mean, we see people like that all the time where somebody's really overreacting and, you know, calm down, don't take it so, you know, why are you freaking out, right? Like, we have no idea what that other person's been through. Right. So it could be a very normal reaction for them, but because we're you know, we're trying to interpret it with our own lens of experiences and what we know about life, then it's easy for us to, you know, say, to make assumptions about somebody else and and put words to it, especially with young people, because, you know, people have such strong emotions about their own adolescence.
Yeah.
It's very easy to put that on kids who are acting badly.
Two of the things I think of if someone's listening to this are someone's experiencing PTSD. Maybe if someone's listening to this and kind of like you in your class are like, oh my gosh, that sounds like me. What would both of you guys recommend that they do?
Well, one thing I would say, you know, is, you know, don't give any importance to what people say or think of you. Because normally I say if you have PTSD or if you go see a counselor, if you're getting therapy, you tend to be weak or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I would say that would be the first thing, you know, don't give a bother to that. Make sure you go see someone. And if you don't find someone to talk to, go online, Google. I mean, with Google and YouTube right now, there's a lot you can learn. Let's say I just wanted to keep everything to myself. I didn't want to share it to anyone. Who knows where I would have been right now, you know? Not having a counselor to go to or my teacher that I could go to and say, hey, you know, I'm experiencing this, you know, can we talk about this?
I would just say, be nice to yourself. I mean, we tend to judge ourselves a lot harsher than we judge others.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to be down on yourself. You know, why can't I just shake this off? Why can't I, you know, what's wrong with me that I'm impacted and, you know, somebody else may not be.
Yeah.
And it's really important to not do that.
Yeah.
Everyone goes through traumatic experiences and everybody reacts differently at different times in their life. And
it's normal.
And it's normal to, that's why it's called traumatic stress.
Yeah.
And the post is just, the event is gone, but we're still reacting.
Right.
It's a process that a lot of people go through. And I think reaching out and getting help, I mean, I'm a little biased. I think everyone could use some therapy to work through things in their past, because we all have baggage from our childhood and we all have things that we go through. And I think it's important to just normalize that and know that there are different times in our life when we need to reach out for help and get support.
For sure. Yeah, baggage from our childhood and beyond.
Yeah.
So the other thing I think of is maybe someone who says, I've been having some really confusing interactions with my kid or my friend or my parent, and maybe it's because of something like this. What would you say to someone like that who's processing, maybe this is why I'm having miscommunications with another person?
Maybe try to create a safe place with them and try to have a conversation, let them know it's okay, you know, just talk to me. Let me know what's going on whenever you're ready.
Yeah.
Let them know that you're here.
Even
if they're not ready in that moment. Mm-hmm. But just knowing you have someone there for you.
That's and presence is so important in so many situations. You know, to take the time to be with somebody, even if they don't want to talk to you, I think is so vital, especially in this day of looking at our phones all the time.
Yeah.
It's really that there's nothing that beats that one-on-one, I am here for you. You know, nothing else is distracting me. If you want to talk about something, I'm ready to listen.
Thank you guys both so much for taking the time, Kathy, for sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us. It's so valuable. And Crystal, just for being willing to talk about this. I think it's easy sometimes to feel like we're entitled to information or someone else's story, but really I think it's a gift that you're willing to share your experience. So thank you for honoring us with that. I think it's really valuable.
I'm happy to do it.
And I mean, you made some kind of comment about just alluding to kind of how it destigmatizes these things to talk about it. And that's such a big part of why we care about doing this and why we talk about these things and what we care about at Second Story. So I think the more we talk about this, the better it is for our general community and other voices, really impactful. So thank you guys both.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Second Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so thankful if you rated our podcast and left us a review. Be sure to also hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Second Stories is created and produced by Second Story with support from our technical director, Franklin Vaughn. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia that works to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. Learn more about what Second Story does and how you can support us at second-story.org. We hope you'll join us next time.